Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the Wednesday, May 9th, 2007 session of the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development. We're now in session. And I'd like to welcome Georgia Pacific this morning, and particularly the folks who've driven a long ways from Wana to talk to us a little bit this morning about why businesses would choose to locate and or expand here in the state of Oregon. It's something that, of course, would be a great interest to this committee and presumably for the public. And I know that received probably the greatest number of emails that I have yet this session based on our informational hearing on Monday. So the public, that you're watching this on TV, we're gaining an audience now. So with that, Peggy?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Peggy Sotto, the Regional Governmental Affairs Manager for Georgia Pacific for the Western United States. We want to thank you for the opportunity to kind of highlight and boast about our Wana operation, which we have put in two new paper machines, one in 2003, four, and one we just announced last year for a little over $400 million, which makes it the largest expansion in our industry in the Western United States. So with me today is Mark Schneider, the operations manager for our consumer products group, and I'm going to turn this over to Marsha Koba, who represents us here in Oregon, because I have a commitment out of town. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Peggy, and certainly appreciate your willingness to come here today, and on relatively short notice, too. We are most appreciative of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a safe trip, Peggy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy. All right, Mr. Chair, we would like to initially thank you for all the support that you've provided the mill over the years. We've had as we go through this presentation deck, you'll see that there are some significant challenges that we have facing us as we continue our competitive operation at the mill. So, and I think you'll get an understanding of some of the issues that we have, and we just want to say thank you for all the support that you've provided to us over the years. So,
most welcome.
I believe you all got a copy of the deck that we have here.
Yes.
We'll go through it on the slides as well, so you have a chance to see what we have to offer. Now, we'd like to spend as much of our time here as we can talking about the reason why Wana. Why would we choose to continue to invest in the Wana, Oregon facility? But along the way, what I'd like to do is also spend a little bit of time talking a little bit about what Wana is, what its history, what we do there, and what the significance of the mill is to the local community. Okay. The first slide is just an overview of Georgia Pacific. Georgia Pacific is headquartered in Atlanta, and it's one of the largest, from a worldwide perspective, it's one of the largest pulp and paper producers in the world. Largest portion of our business nowadays is in the consumer products. And when we talk about consumer products, we're talking about tissue, toilet tissue products, quilted northern bath tissue, brawny, paper towels. We make a wide variety of different products. We employ over 50,000 people at over 300 locations in North America and Europe. And then in just a year or so ago, we were purchased, and this is a significant impact to us in our operation. We were purchased by Koch Enterprises, and they, Koch Industries, it's a private equity firm, if you will, and they basically now own all of Georgia Pacific as a private entity. Private companies have a significantly different set of expectations, as far as we can tell, in terms of promptness of moving. Once they make a decision around capital investments, it's very, very critical that we behave and we get the project implemented very quickly. And we thought that our challenges were pretty high when we were a public company, but the level has really increased. The expectations has increased as a result of becoming a private company. The next slide is our business segments that we're in. The first one that I'm sure a lot of you guys are aware of, when you think about Georgia Pacific, you do think about plywood. You see a lot of our products in buildings that are being installed around the world. We make structural panels, a lot of gypsum board, and then there's a number of chemicals that we make that are used in the building products area. We make a lot of packaging materials, liner board. A lot of the cardboard boxes that we use to ship our products in are made internally within our own company. We make a lot of bleached board. A lot of the ice cream containers that you pick up in retail establishments are made on Georgia Pacific board. And in the consumer products area, we split up our businesses into various segments. We've got the retail channel, which is product that's sold in the grocery channel. It's sold in the clubs. Costco sells a lot of our products. We have a commercial segment that's we call that away from home. So if you're in a restaurant, you may be using Georgia Pacific products. A lot of you may be familiar with the InMotion brand, the dispensers that you wave your hand in front of it, paper towel spits out. That's a Georgia Pacific invention, and that's a big business for us within the commercial channel. Dixie products, Dixie cups. That's a Georgia Pacific brand. And then we have the international segment. Wide variety of different products. They're sold in Europe and elsewhere. And then the communication papers channel. A lot of the paper that we use, this material is produced on Georgia Pacific base stock, and we converted it to the Camas, Washington facility. Okay. In terms of payroll, GP's Oregon payroll. Now we've got a wide variety of mills in Oregon, and our payroll in Oregon is about $210 million. We've got facilities in the paper products in Wana and Halsey. We have lumber mills in Coos Bay and Philomath. Chemical plants throughout the area. We've got the gypsum facility, and then we have a brown paper facility in Toledo, Oregon. The vast majority of the, like I said before, vast majority of the cases that we use, the knockdown cases, the cardboard cases that we use to ship our products into the grocery channel, is made on base stock that is produced in Toledo. We're the largest paper company in Oregon and Washington, and years ago, in some of the parent companies, we had a wide variety or large timberland assets. But now no longer do we have any timberland assets. Those have been sold off or purchased by other parties as we've gone through the various companies. Okay, a little bit about Wana operations. How many of you know where Wana is? Yeah. All right. You know, this is an interesting slide because years ago I'd do a number of presentations, and I was in the Astoria Chamber of Commerce, I believe, and I can't recall who it was I was speaking with, but I had a slide very similar to this. It had a rainbow kind of going over the mill with a bald eagle flying through the center of the rainbow, and I love that photo, and I cannot find it anymore. But I had that photo, and I always started the presentations out with that. But now here I was in Astoria, and I asked people if they knew where the mill was, and a lot of people said that they did. But a lady in the back raised her hand, and she said, I asked her what the question was, and she said, "Well, what river is that?" And here I was in Astoria, and at the time I thought that she was just kidding with me. So I told her it was the Kalama. But she took the answer as though it was fact. So I always want to make sure that people understand this is the Columbia River. And the reason why I go through all that for you guys is that when you drive by the mill on Highway 30, well, what you see is the top of a chip pile. You don't really have any kind of perspective around what's going on in that facility, with how large it is, how much product we produce. You don't see a lot of trucks going up and down the road. We'll talk about why that is. Now, we like that because we're viewed as a good neighbor, if you will, within the community. And that's a significant thing for us in Wana. It is a big facility. But again, you really don't have a perspective of it if you don't really have some insight of what goes on in it. So, Now, you see, we are right on the river, and as because of the fact we're right on the river, our environmental compliance is a significant component of our operation. We talk environmental compliance all of the time, make sure that we're doing everything we possibly can to meet or exceed our environmental regulatory requirements. We have about 1,000 people who work at the WANA facility. There's 880 of them are the United Steelworkers Union members. We only have one union there, and that's the USW. We're the largest private employer in Clatsop County. We have a significant amount of pride in our environmental stewardship. So you'll see a lot of things if you talk to us in the mill, you'll hear a lot of things about our environmental compliance. We're the largest supporter of the United Way in Clatsop and community counties. This last year we generated $262,000 in contributions. In addition to that, we typically donate about over 3,000 cases of product to local agencies. There's immediate needs pop up in the community. Various needs pop up. People need toilet paper for whatever reason, and we generally are willing to provide product to the right organizations. And we typically donate about over $75,000 a year to local agencies. Our payroll is $90 million plus. We pay $2.6 million in state and local taxes. And you can do the math. You take a $90 million payroll over 1,000 employees. We typically, with the fringe rates that we typically operate under, our annual per capita income is just over $60,000. The remainder, the delta of it, you guys do the math, it's about $30,000 typically in fringe benefits, life insurance, health insurance, all of those other elements. Our average rate on a per hour basis is over $20 an hour. Another significant element for the mill is the number of years of experience that we have. Our average employee has over 17 years of service. It's a great place to work. There's a lot of reason to come there, not only just the salary, the wage rates that we offer, but it offers a career opportunity for people, and a lot of folks will start out in one area of the mill, learn different skills, and move over to another area of the mill. So a lot of people want to come there and stay there when they do get a job in that facility. All right, as far as the products that we make, I mentioned before we make these a wide variety of products. 51% of Georgia Pacific products on the West Coast are supplied by the WANA facility. We make every single roll of Brawny that's sold on the West Coast. We produce in the WANA facility, and we make over 60,000 cases per day of consumer products. And they're the products that we generate. There's Sparkle, paper towels, Quilted Northern. We talked about Angel Soft. Hopefully, you've seen a number of these things in the store. Maybe you use them yourself. We make a lot of napkins, and what's not shown here are some of the facial products. We generate a number of facial tissue products. A lot of people say Kleenex. We don't make Kleenex, so we don't use that term. The bottom bullet there shows that if you take the 60,000 cases of product and you put them in a truck, they generate about 120 trucks a day. But people don't see. There you go.
Angel Soft.
Right there, yeah. Angel Soft. That's our product. If you put that number of cases of product in trucks, you'd have 120 trucks a day rolling up and down Highway 30, and that's not something that a lot of us would really like to necessarily see happen. What we do in WANA is, and again, we're right on the river. We utilize the river for our transport. We put 90% of the products that we produce go onto a barge, and we float the product upriver to our warehouses in the Portland area, where we distribute out of that right on the I-5 corridor. So from our perspective, it's a low-cost, very efficient, very prompt way to get product to our customers. And we can respond very quickly to immediate customer needs this way. Our paper manufacturing, we have 5 total paper machines there. 4 of them are towel and tissue. And one of them is a business papers paper machine. We make over 650,000 tons of pulp and paper every year. And again, the barge. We can't say enough really about our barge process and the way we take product to market is really very effective for us. And we need to continue to look for ways to become more cost effective in our facility, because we've got some significant challenges going forward. All right, a little bit about our operation. This is just some kind of high level statistics, if you will. When we make what we call parent rolls, large rolls of paper in the facility on our paper machines, we take the large rolls of paper into what we call our converting operation, where we convert the large paper rolls into the products that we typically buy in the grocery stores. So when we use that term tissue converting, what we're really talking about is just the conversion of the large paper rolls into the various products. Just a couple of examples here. We make 3.9 million cases of Quilted Northern every day, and an average case has about 100 rolls in it. So you can imagine, you were basically talking about 390 million rolls of paper, toilet paper, every year that we're producing. A lot of product goes out of that facility, and you don't see it because it's going down by the barge. This is the next slide is an overview of our process. We do bring chips into the mill via barge, truck, various methodologies. We convert the chips into pulp there, and we bleach our pulp. People would like to have bright white tissue products. We convert the pulp that we produce on our paper machines into paper. From the paper, we take it into our converting area, where we convert it into various products, again, that we use. It goes via the barge or a truck to a warehouse. Sometimes we do go to a direct truck to our customers, but very, very seldom. A lot of our customers want to have commingled product mixed in a truck. They don't want to just get a whole truckload of toilet paper. They want to get a truckload of toilet paper, paper towels, and the various things, the Dixie products that they need to sell in their store. From the warehouse, we typically will receive customer orders, send it to a truck, and get right to our customers. We should have a picture of a happy customer there in this slide. All right, a little bit now about about number 7 paper machine. As Peggy mentioned, in 2003, we installed a $250 million project on the mill site. It was number 6 paper machine and associated converting assets. That project added about 110 people to our mill site. As a continuation of that capital expenditure, we're looking at putting in a similar paper machine, and we'll get into the timeline of this project, but this is really the nuts and bolts of what we want to talk about with you today. But it really involves this number 7 paper machine, and this is an overview of the mill. I don't know if you can tell, but there's the river is to the north of us in this photo, and if you look right on the river where this red circle is, at the very bottom of the red circle is the number 6 paper machine. That's the first paper machine we talked about, the $250 million expansion. Now we're talking about this number 7, and we're currently developing this site. You'll see a photo of it later. And that's about a $200 million project to put in another paper machine and to relocate a line, an additional converting line, into the Wana facility. As we get into the project, this project is going to have a significantly less impact in terms of employment to the mill than number 6 did. And we'll talk a little bit about why that's the case. But it is a $200 million investment. We're just now getting the machine. We're starting to peak up onto our construction. We're nowhere near 550 construction workers. But as we get the building put up in further, then we'll end up with 550 construction workers as we peak out at construction. It'll retain 25 positions at the mill. That excludes the converting aspect. We do have this converting line coming in, and that's going to have some impact on their employment as well. But this has a much less impact from an employment standpoint, but it is critical to the mill's viability. Typically, paper machines consume a lot less labor dollars, if you will, uses a lot less employment than converting aspects of our operation. It's when you add converting is when you really begin to increase the employment on the machines in the mill, but it's vital that you have viable paper machines to feed the converting facilities. Our Camas facility has just gone through a number of closures of assets, and a lot of that is due to the fact that we haven't had investment in the paper machines. But paper machines typically are very high capital, and it's just very, very critical with regard to the overall cost effectiveness of the facility. Now, Georgia Pacific, within the context of the Coke Industries, announced that in May of 2006 that we were going to put in an additional two paper machines somewhere in the nation. They hadn't really announced the location of where these things were going to be, but I want to give you some idea of the timeline that we tried to respond to, because it really feeds into what we want to talk about today. A number of us really began to start working on the project in the May, June timeframe. And we began to work with state and local agencies around what would be required to install the paper machine, where we wanted to put it, even on the mill site. We have a right of way, a railroad that runs right through the mill site. So we had to work through with the railroad around right of way placement of the paper machine. So quite a bit of work went on from May and into August, and then in September, they announced the paper machine was going to come into the Wana facility. The point being here is that when Coke decided to install these paper machines, they want to move very quickly. The first paper machine is very important to get moving very quickly. So when we went to the state of Oregon and started talking about the various issues that we had to deal with, we really needed to get responses extremely quickly. And when we began the process, a number of us really didn't think that we could execute as quickly as we were being asked to execute. But I think you'll hear it later is that the state, all of us were able to respond very quickly, and we ought to all feel very proud about that, because we got a very good successful result for us. And then in October we began to break ground on the paper machine. Now let me back up and kind of flesh in some of the details. This is kind of the skeleton of our timeline. In June, we met with the Oregon Economic Development Council, a fellow by the name of Art Fish, and a number of folks were there. I think Bob, you were at the meeting as well. And a number of us really didn't understand what some of the options that we had for placement. Now, I just want to back up here and say that we were not the only mill in the running for this paper machine. So all of the mills that were in the running for the machine were doing the same thing that we were doing. They were beginning to work with the states of which they were part of. So it was incumbent upon us to work with the state to find out what sorts of opportunities we had for property tax exemption, for some of the other issues that we had to deal with. So that happened in late June. Okay, so the timeline here was very, very, very critical for us. At the time, we had not even heard of this thing called the Strategic Investment Program, the SIP process. We were thinking that it was Enterprise Zone. So we were here in Salem talking about the Enterprise Zone, and a lot of it was a learning adventure for us to find out things about the SIP process that really became obvious to us that was the advantageous approach that we had relative to some of the other states and the other mills that were competing for this paper machine. The process...
Yes, Representative Dahl.
That citing thing, is that contradicts the rumors that, or the feel that it takes forever to get the permitting process. Everything was done from May to September.
Yeah, in terms of this SIP process, we really didn't learn about the SIP process until late June. Actually, I think it was the 27th or 28th of June. So it's unbelievable, isn't it? How fast
that is,
this process?
Yeah, that is.
Now, when we talk about permitting, you get that encompasses a lot of things. There's environmental permitting, and the environmental permitting took a little bit longer. But I'll say one thing about the mill, and I wasn't necessarily involved in the project at the time. The mill got a jump very early. As soon as they began hearing about this paper machine in May, they began working on the environmental permit, began working with the DEQ around the permit. But we'll get into that a little bit later.
Thank you.
Yeah, phenomenal response on this project. Let me just say one thing, is that given that we've executed at this time frame, my suspicion is that it's even going to get more difficult in the future. The hurdle always keeps getting raised, doesn't it? I mean, we never really back off on it. So that's just one of the challenges we'll have to have going forward. Now, The process with the SIP program is that we have to go for county approval for the overall agreement and all. And we had to bring a lot of different people in to help us execute this thing. But we began meeting with the county in early July. And we basically had had agreement with the county to move forward by the middle of July. So I do want to say one thing about the county. They really, really jumped onto this thing to help us out. And if it weren't for some of the efforts that the county went through, we wouldn't be sitting in the situation that we're sitting in. So, and we also had to have the agreement from the state economic development. I don't know the actual name of the committee that had to meet for us, but they had to have an emergency meeting for us to try to meet our time frame. And the state again jumped through hoops and had emergency meetings to try to approve our process. And that was again another benefit to us on our project. So all in all, it was a 6 to 8 week time frame for us, and every time I think about that, it's just unbelievable to me that we were able to execute that 6 to 8 weeks in terms of this property tax and the strategic investment program. So my hat's off to the folks in the state economic development, our fish in the group in the county, but a number of us didn't think that we could actually pull that off. Back on the environmental permit. We began working with the environmental permit writers, George Davis in the DEQ in the May time frame. And at the end of July, we actually had our public meetings on it. Now, we didn't have a single negative comment in any of our public meetings. All the folks who showed up were all positive for this project. So it was a pretty smooth process all in all. But again, it was just incredible how fast that even the environmental permits were granted and were allowed in this project. And a number of other mills were struggling a little bit, frankly, with getting the environmental permits pulled together. So that, again, was another benefit for us in the state of Oregon to get this project. When we began this whole process, the first thing that we started doing was meeting with the chair, Mr. Chair Witt. We met with Betsy Johnson. We met with Tony Hyde. We talked to a number of people about how do we execute this project in this time frame that we were asked to do. And again, I just want to thank everybody who was involved in this process. It wouldn't have gone as well as it did were it not for all that help. Art Fish was phenomenal. Working with us. We had a lot of questions about the strategic investment program, a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls back and forth, and we actually executed and worked all the information that the county needed to have very, very quickly. In Clatsop County, we had Sam Patrick, know him. Scott Derrickson's the county administrator for Clatsop County. Some of the folks, Julia Decker, was another big, big help for us in executing this whole project. Some of the other factors that the Georgia Pacific views when they're looking at the state of Oregon, why invest in the state of Oregon, is that we have this inexpensive river transportation that's available to us. This barge really allows us to get product to market on a timely and low-cost basis. When we put in the number 6 machine, it was the best startup curve that Georgia Pacific has ever experienced. And so that experience just continues to go through. So the mill is doing what it has to do to make use of the asset on a timely basis. We have a large variety, a large number of highly skilled employees. It's a good workforce. We have a lot of folks in our community who want to come to work at WANA. Now these machines and these assets are all very highly computer based. You have to have a lot of skills to work on these machines. So we look at the overall community to find out if the community is able to support us with the employees that we need to have to operate these assets. And our past experience has been a cooperative relationship with county and state. And so those are other elements that go into play here when we're deciding which mills get which paper machines. And then the other thing that was really advantageous to us in this time frame here was that the construction. There was a workforce available. It was ready to go. We had a different way we were going to try to structure our contracts this time. We were trying to use a unit rate contracting strategy, and people were willing to talk to us about that, and they were willing to learn about how we wanted to structure this overall project. Other elements that really came into play, particularly around the environmental permit, was that we had letters of support from the local community, the Chamber of Commerce in Clatskanie, the Astoria Chamber of Commerce, the Port of St. Helens, City of Clatskanie wrote letters all in favor of the mill, continued operation in the mill. And that really goes a long ways towards helping us get environmental permits. During our public hearing support for the SIP process in the county, Clatsop United Way stepped forward and talked a lot about in favor of the mill. So we had a lot of community support, and that goes a long ways when you're in Atlanta to know that the community which you're operating supports your operation. And we do have some continued challenges for us as we go forward. Energy prices continue to increase, as I'm sure we're all well aware of that. It impacts the paper mills in very significantly, because we use fossil fuels and electrical energy to dry our paper. So that's a big issue for us going forward. We've had a sharp increase recently in fiber prices, and fiber continues to go up and up and up in the Northwest. It's going up throughout the United States, but it's going up a little bit higher rate in the Pacific Northwest than it is elsewhere. So that's an item that we're really continuing to keep our focus on. And then we do have high labor costs relative to other facilities. So from a WANA perspective, the way we stay competitive is by continuing to operate well, keep our efficiencies low waste, and a lot of the nuts and bolts, the details that you have to continue to keep your costs down. Now, what we can do from a cooperative standpoint is we can continue to work together, looking at ways to keep our overall business climate in a situation where we keep our costs down. That's rather ambiguous, but there are a number of things that we can do that improve the overall business climate for the mill to operate within. And I just want to make sure folks understand there's a lot of internal competition amongst the mills in George Pacific, not only for paper machines. When we're really talking about our future viability, we compete for paper machines, but we compete for our markets also. Some of our mills can get product into the Los Angeles area, which is a large market segment for the WANA facility. They can get product into the Los Angeles area from a transportation cost just as effectively as you can from the WANA Oregon facility. So we compete internally for products and market share within our own company. So it's incumbent, very important, that we keep our costs down relative not only to our competition, but internal competition.
Representative Dolan.
You're talking about the challenges of energy prices and fiber prices. One of the things that this committee, and I don't want to speak for the entire committee, has been very concerned with is providing living wage jobs. So what can the state do to help you compete? We want the living wage jobs, but we also want your industry very badly. Mm-hmm. And if you were to give us a list of things that we could do that would make us more competitive as Oregonians, what would be on that list?
I guess I would start out by, this SIP process goes a long ways towards that. If anything, I think, I don't have any specific details in how I would want to enhance that, but one of the things that I would be supportive of is continuing to enhance programs such as the SIP, because that is a key advantage that the state of Oregon has over other facilities and other states in the offerings that the other states have in the country. Another element is the Department of Energy processes that you have to try to help people learn about ways to improve the energy efficiencies of our facilities. I can't begin to tell you how much we appreciated the help from the Department of Energy on this project. There are a lot of things. We operate paper facilities, and there are a lot of things that we can do in our industry that can help us lower our energy consumption, which we talked about. That is a key challenge. So So to the degree that the state can help us learn how to improve our energy efficiency, that goes a long way. So I would continue to be very supportive of those sorts of programs. Within the SIP, there is a community service fee arrangement. I believe up to 25% of the property taxes or the property tax savings roll up into a community service fee. I think there's some, you know, there's some ways that you could, we could probably look at providing some level of support for the overall mill operation within the context of the community service fee. That may be one of the enhancements that we have. But overall, I think the other elements, I think we just continue to work on ways that continue to help us improve our overall cost effectiveness. Environmental pressures is one element that we're always very sensitive to. Did I answer your question? I mean, it's
mm-hmm. Thank you.
Vice Chair Lim.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate your presentation and comment, especially on the SIP program, Strategic Investment Program,
mm-hmm.
and why did you choose SIP program instead of Enterprise Zone program? What's the differences? Why do you think SIP is more more better than the other program?
Well, a couple of reasons, Representative Lim. The primary reason for us, though, is a 15-year agreement. One of the things that was beneficial to us is that continued. We intend, and we have all the intentions in the world in continuing to invest strategically into the WANA facility. It's a 15-year agreement, so a lot of the future investments that we have fall into this agreement that we've generated here this last year. So that's one of the benefits, rather than the old Enterprise Zone option that we had, where you have to go through the Enterprise Zone agreement every single time you have a project going forward. The other thing is the employment requirements is the Enterprise Zone. When we did the number 6 machine, we had to meet a certain threshold of employment, and the SIP process doesn't require that. And the reason why that's important to us is that Georgia Pacific is really beginning to begin this to enter this whole lean manufacturing process. We have different terms for it, but it's incumbent upon the mills to continue to invest and reduce our costs. And I'll give you an example of that. Is that one element of this project is to install these automated guided vehicles. Now we typically in the past we've had our operators driving Hysters picking up product and picking, you know, moving it from point A to point B in the facility. That action costs money and doesn't increase value in the product. And as you begin to look at your processes, what you find is that you need to begin to eliminate the processes that you have in the mill that add cost but don't add value to the product. And so what we're doing here now is we're looking at all of our options or all of the opportunities we have to increase the overall cost effectiveness within this context of lean manufacturing. And so we don't really have a good read on what the employment levels are going to be in the mill going forward if everything stays static. So as we improve our overall efficiencies, we expect to employ less people. So that one of the benefits that we have around the SIP process is it doesn't have that threshold level to meet.
Thank you.
All right. Let's talk about a little bit about investment. This is a map of the world, and it shows what sorts of investments are going on throughout the world. And you can see where the bulk of the investments are. Some of these are paper machine installations. Some of them are converting operations. Some of them are just rebuilds of existing assets. But if you look at the portion of the map that represents the Pacific Northwest, there's really one dot there, and that's the WANA facility. So we have an ongoing challenge. People are beginning to move product from China into the Pacific Northwest. They're selling toilet tissue in the Pacific Northwest from China. So our competition, this is a different way of looking at our market. We typically haven't thought of having imports of the tissue product as a challenge to us in our market. But in fact, it's happening to us, and we need to become a lot more efficient. And a lot of these mills are brand new mills, and they can hit our market at very low cost. So that's an ongoing issue for us. A couple of just informational tips here about the about number seven. This is a photo of the number seven project, the current status. Right now, it kind of looks like a department store, I think. Just a building going up that's steel. You can begin to see some of the ducts down in the very bottom. You see the round ductwork coming out down there. That's really your only indication that that's a paper machine. But we're really at the beginnings of this and at the start of our project. And really, we're just in the steel erection component of it. So we're only up to a couple hundred plus people on the project for right now. Georgia Pacific is the general, the GC on this project, the general contractor. That's a little bit different from the way other people tend to operate projects of this type. Our major contractors, though, are J.H. Kelly. Kelly is doing the steel erection. They're putting the building up. They're based out of Longview. We're very proud right now of the contractors we have on site. They're doing a phenomenal job. So I want to spend a little bit of time talking about that. Harder Mechanical in Portland has got the piping contract. Electrical Construction Company, they're based out of Portland. They've got all of the electrical part of the project. We do have Kinsey Construction. They're based out of Clatskanie. They do small projects for site excavation, moving earthwork around. You know, just various projects, various issues we have around related to the project. And Bergerson out of Astoria did the pile driving. So we've got a lot of local people on the project here, and we're really happy with the amount of work that they're getting done in a very short time frame. We had a problem with the pile driving on this project. It's not a very cooperative site. Now, pile drivers make their living complaining about the earth. But they had a really good reason on this project. We had some subterranean mountains that we were trying to drive pile through. So we had a lot of issues with pile driving. Got us behind schedule, actually. But steel erection now has come to the table, and they've actually got us back on schedule now. So the project's right on schedule for a November startup. We have 250 contractors on site. 80% of them are union. We do have just under 40 people who are non-union. They're the machine installers. They're Spirit Construction. They've installed the vast majority of the paper machines that have gone in the United States, particularly of this technology. So they really got a leg up on the installation of the machine. Once we begin our piping and electrical work, we expect our union staffing to get up to 90% on the project. And the project's right on schedule. And with that, you guys have any questions for me?
Committee members.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
Yes, I am very much interested in knowing how do you handle the environmental issue, such as chemical discharges and bleachings and a whole thing, which is a big issue nowadays. And how do you handle those things? And where do you dump that? If you have to dump something.
Okay. Well, we obviously go to our regulatory requirements.
Yes.
The first thing. Now, our objective is to meet or exceed the environmental regulations. And in fact, what we typically try to do is exceed them on an everyday basis. Compliance is a critical element of Koch Industries in Georgia Pacific. So we take that very, very seriously. We do pull water, fresh water from the Columbia River. We discharge to the Columbia River. We have our own primary and secondary effluent treatment on site. We continue to measure that. We bring in contractors to help us do the sampling and the testing. These days, the custody requirements of environmental samples has gotten to the point where the mill doesn't feel comfortable managing that ourselves, so we bring in contractors to help us manage the custody issues around our sampling. We do the same thing from an air standpoint. Now, when you look at expansion, one of the things that you begin to do is you when you define what your regulatory requirements need to be, you know, there are a number of ways that you go about doing that, but we typically look at the best available control technologies, the backed agreements. And so what you'll do is you look at what people are able to accomplish using new technology throughout the nation, and you use that as a benchmark for you as you establish your requirements going forward on your new project. But you were always trying to get better is the key. We're always trying to increase our ability to meet environmental compliance. And none of us like to smell the mills. All of the employees at the mill, we're all part of the community. So we want to just continue to improve our ability to meet environmental requirements.
Okay, one more question.
Please.
And of course, you mentioned concerning the energy supply, and then of course, this is going up. Currently, we are looking at the Senate Bill 838, which is requiring by 2025 the energy comes from the green power, whatever it might be. And then, can you comment on it? Because we are relying on the coals and the oils from other countries, we just cannot do that. And eventually, when we are turning into the green biomass, the ocean, wind, solar, geothermal, whatever, energy prices will continue to go up to some degree. And can you comment on that?
Sure. I look at energy costs. You need to look at it from a whole comprehensive perspective. You know, what does energy really cost us? There's a number of societal costs in addition just the overall cost that consumers pay. As we explore more and more into green power opportunities, biofuels, all those sorts of things, my suspicion, my belief is that we're not really going to be able to execute that on the backs of the consumer, if you will. It's incumbent upon us to explore additional opportunities without increasing the costs to the consumers, because particularly in an industrial standpoint, because once again, our competition is not just people within the state of Oregon. Our competition is within all the states of the United States, and in fact, it's expanding out. It's a worldwide competition. So we really cannot put ourselves in a position where we disadvantage ourselves from a cost standpoint, because I guarantee you what will happen is if we continue to increase operating costs relative to our competition, which again is worldwide, then we will not have the jobs here. People will buy product from China. When you go to Dollar Tree or when you go to Walmart and you have an opportunity to buy tissue from Georgia Pacific Wana that costs more than tissue from China, typically people will buy the paper from China.
Just one more question.
Please follow up.
Yes, the competition, worldwide competition is the key issue.
Mm-hmm.
Such as China, their wages maybe, maybe 1/10, 1/20 compared to United States. You are paying $20+ per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Over there, their per capita incomes is $800 a year or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then their cost so low, labor intensive cost, how can we compete effectively? We might be able to do some, automatic machines, all kinds of things. Still, environmental standard over there much lower than ours, and then labor cost. And are you able to compete with China or any other countries?
Well, we certainly have been able to compete here to date, and I think that what we have got to continue to do is to expand our ability to compete through strategic investments. It's important that we're implementing these I mentioned automatic guided vehicles in the mill, we're a lot of people are sensitive to having, you know, some people call these things robots, but they basically will travel through the mill, and instead of having a human sitting on a fork truck moving product from point A to point B, again, it's expensive to have people doing that, and they don't add, we're not adding any value to the product. It's important that we continue investments of that type and have robots do that. It's a capital investment, but it reduces your ongoing operating costs. And really what you're trying to do is just get more and more efficient. And it's incumbent upon us is that as we do those sorts of investments in the in the mill, the level of technical expertise, the technical demands on our people go up, and then that typically fuels the family wage jobs. I just don't believe that we can continue this pattern that we've had where we have family wage jobs on doing jobs that really aren't adding value to the product. When we do spend a dollar on labor, it has to add a dollar of value to the product, and that's something that we have to continue to work on in the mills.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, it's going to take capital.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairman.
Representative Gerard.
One of the concerns that I have, I come from a timber district, and mm-hmm. obviously the supply of timber has been reduced over the years, and you are reliant on chip supply. I was kind of curious, you know, with cogeneration putting further demands on chips, and then biofuels eventually will put demands on chips, are you at all concerned about your chip supply?
We absolutely are concerned about our chip supply. The question is, what can we do about it? And again, there is some opportunities from a technological standpoint. Some of the type of paper machine that we're putting into Wana today is a machine technology that can develop product attributes with less fiber in it. So we're trying to do some of those kinds of things to help offset some of the demands that we have on fiber, but it continues to be an issue for us.
Additional questions? Mr. Snyder, I know that you mentioned the internal competition that was going on within Georgia-Pacific for the location of your paper machines. Could you tell us a little bit more about the decisions that were made to ultimately locate number 7 machine at Wana, mm-hmm. and what went into those decision-making process?
Sure. Now there was, Wana did have an advantage in the overall project because we'd already put one of these TAD paper machines in, and we demonstrated some capability around it. But we really can't. We can't put too much stock, if you will, in our ability to operate through air dry these types of paper machines, because each machine decision is really an independent decision. So you really have to look at each decision around the capital expenditure separately. And really, when you're doing that, what you've got to do is you're looking at the overall operating costs. So each mill will generate the what we expect our operating costs to be. Energy, fiber. We do an evaluation, looking at what we expect our future cost to be over 5, 10-year, 15-year period of the machines. We look at labor availability. We look at the cost to get the product to the market, and that's not just the operating costs, but that's also transportation, distribution costs. And then at the end, we think we really have to go to capital. Well, what is the capital cost to implement it in each of the facilities? And when we start talking about that, that's when we really get into the environmental permitting requirements, building, construction permit requirements, site issues. But really, from a fairly high level, if you look at it from a corporate standpoint, the cost to implement the project really is one of the factors, but it's not necessarily the first factors one of the first factors you think of.
I remember, yes, Vice Chair Riley.
one of the things that you mentioned, and I want to know how important it is the speed of being able to implement the project. Where does that rank in the decision making?
That's a good question. When we speak generally, it's, you know, that can vary project decision to project decision. I will talk about the number 7 project, and it was critical that we get this thing executed quickly. We'd been given a demand from one of our key customers, so we had a competitive requirement that we had to do. We had to execute this thing very quickly. Once Koch, and one of the things and I mentioned it earlier, but one of the differences around the private versus the public is that the demands just seem to be just incredibly intense. Is when our customers told us that they wanted us to change our product, they wanted it now, and that's basically what our corporate office wanted as well. So it was vital that we get this thing executed very quickly. And what you find also as you start looking at manufacturers, it used to be we'd have a shelter in terms of being able to take a year to execute a strategic investment program. You know, and I think the WANA 6, I think we talked enterprise zone for over a year before we actually came to agreement on the enterprise zone. But we used to have some shelter from the manufacturers of the paper machine. It used to be that they would take, you know, 12 to 18 months before they could get turnaround. But what's happened to us is that these guys have gotten a lot faster also. You give them an order and they want to start working on it. So everything is just moving much, much faster now for us. And again, I think that's one of the kudos, I think, that I would give to the state is that the state really came through here. We executed this agreement 6 to 8 weeks, which is just, I think, is a phenomenal achievement through the county and then back to the state. And that really... that helps cement the decision to put the machine in WANA.
Oh, if I may.
Please.
And another subject, education of the workforce. you talked about you have higher technology requirements now than you used to have, and that's true of almost every industry. Mm-hmm. How well does this community stack up against other communities?
Well, frankly, that's becoming an increasing concern for us in the state mm-hmm. of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got to start looking at education. This is just my personal view. We need to begin looking at education much like we do our processes. You know, we have got to continue to improve the capability of students who exit our public schools. They have got to have more and better skills. And I think we're static right now. I think we really need to start reconsidering that because our industry requirements are going up and up and up. We're operating robots now. We're operating computers that operate robots. And it's not so much to understand how the process works. You need to understand not only the process, you need to understand how the control strategies work, how the computers interact, how the data interface. There's a lot more demands now on our employees than they've ever been. So,
thank you.
Now our training tools have increased as well. One of the things I didn't mention is that we've gotten a training grant from the state of Oregon to help us with our develop the materials that we have. Training technologies have increased significantly as well. It used to be that you'd open up a book, you'd read a book, maybe someone would lecture you on how a piece of equipment works. Adults don't learn that way. So what we've tried to do is automate the training and animate the training, do self-paced computer training so that people can spend the time that they need to have to learn, you know, get a better and better understanding of this because the demands are higher and people have less time to learn it. So.
Yes, one more question. Chair Lim, please.
Well, thank you very much again, Mr. Chair. And as I hear your testimony, I got the impression that your company working well with the labor unions mm-hmm. and since paying 20-plus jobs. And while you are automation, automatic robots, whatever, you are going to demand less labors. And do you have any concern with the dispute with the unions and labor, or how do you work out with the labor issues, if you have any?
You know, we have ongoing issues that pop up from time to time with our unions, but really, I think the I think that they're just right hand in hand with what the demands are. As the demands increase on employees, then pay increases as well. So we, the jobs that just cost money, that don't add value, you know, those are the jobs that are typically going to be lower paying jobs in the future. And our union in WANA is typically about high paying jobs, family wage jobs. And when you have a high paid job, you've got to add value. So what our intention going forward is to reduce or eliminate jobs in the mill that do not add value to product, and increase the number of jobs that add value for the product. And I think they're just locked in step with each other.
Okay, just one comment. I would just want to make. Since you are speaking so highly of our state and OECD department so efficiently working with you in a short time range, is it possible that the Georgia Pacific's headquarters could come back to our state? We will be available. You know, my suggestion.
It's a great suggestion, but I don't think that'll happen.
Let's think about it.
Yeah, we'll think about it. Yeah, we'll think about it.
WANA Pacific.
Yeah, WANA. There you go. WANA Pacific.
Well, I'm sure your group would love to have them come here, but so would all the other mills would like to have them around as well.
On the other hand, sometimes it's good to have the corporate office, you know, farther away. Pros and cons.
Don't forget you're on TV.
Mr. Snyder, would you comment, kind of following up on Representative Lim's last question, about the impact that that modernization of the mill, its technology, the machines, and what bearing that has on employment tenure and the employees' understanding of long-term attachment to the company?
Well, I think one of the things that's necessarily incumbent upon the employer in that situation is to provide, to bring the right people into the mill. So we do quite a bit of work with our local employment offices to make sure that we're selecting the right people. Once again, as we eliminate the lower skilled jobs in the facility, we just got to bring the right type of people into the mill. Once you bring them into the mill, then you train them, and we put a significant investment into people. And from as an employee myself, I think one of the things that we all benefit from and that we all appreciate is when we get the background that we need to have to do our jobs effectively. And I think that builds a certain degree of loyalty and commitment to the facility. I think when you talk to people in the mill, I think what you find is a lot of commitment to the WANA facility. So I think people do want to stay, and there's a degree of longevity just as a result of that.
And I agree with you, and I think that perhaps maybe you're even too modest, because if you're to talk to the employees in WANA, I think the response that you get on the shop floor level is this mill is highly competitive globally. And as a result, we see modernization not as a threat to our jobs, but rather the thing that's going to guarantee the longevity of our jobs, that this mill is going to be here for the long haul, it's going to remain competitive, and they're looking forward to the possibility even of locating additional production and maybe even additional jobs for potentially new machines or whatever. At the company. So, and I think that your company's ability to sit down with the employees and discuss with them the long-term future, the long-term planning has made it possible for everyone to understand that and to welcome it. Modernization, I think, is a is a welcome phenomenon among the workforce at WANA.
Yeah, and I can only second what you've said there. One of the characteristics that we have with our working relationship with our union is all very business oriented. We're always looking at what do we have to do to become more competitive from a business perspective. Classic case in point of what you're talking about. I've just come back from Sweden yesterday. We bought the paper machine, number 7 paper machine from Sweden. We took all of our machine tenders over with us to Sweden for the checkout of the paper machine. And while they were there, we did we sat down with the engineers, the detailed engineers, so that our operators truly understood how the machine was designed to operate. And that's, you know, how things are operated and how they were designed to operate can sometimes be a little bit, in opposition. But it's important that we understand how things are designed to operate. While we're there, we talked about business. We talked about what do we have to do to be effective. And so there's a lot of dialogue, a lot of discussion goes on between us and our workforce around the things that improve our cost competitiveness. And I think what we need to continue to do from a state standpoint is work on the climate, the business climate, so that we just continue to be more competitive, because I think the demands are just going to increase in the future.
Thank you. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Snyder, earlier in your testimony, you touched on something that I've been personally focused on a little bit and this committee's heard about, was the importance of the workforce itself and recognizing the amount of training and the amount of technology changing and trying to keep up with that. But you briefly recognized the importance of the construction and the availability of skilled workers there, and that's something that has been brought to the attention of this committee as the future shortage of skilled workers in the construction industry that we have talked about that issue here and looked at apprenticeship programs, getting back to education a little bit and seeing that we have some voc ed type of focus at least at some point in trying to connect apprenticeship programs and things like that with an up and coming workforce is being vitally important. And as we see projects like this pop up and projects around the state and just our basic infrastructure needs, I just was curious about a comment from you about the importance of that workforce as well, because its technology and processes are also changing rapidly as well, and it takes a lot of training there. And I'm just curious, you had a good experience evidently with that workforce, but do you see a concern going forward with that workforce as you do with your own in-house workforce?
Oh, to the degree that we, I guess I would say, yeah, we do have a concern of that going forward. This particular project was the right time frame for us. There was an available workforce to execute our project, and it was local because people, you know, there's a lot of people don't want to commute a long ways to do a project like this. What I would say though that kind of builds off of what you were talking about is the degree of change within the overall construction technique that's used to install this machine. we're on a time frame on this particular project that is 1 to 2 months faster on a construction time frame than what the prior project was. So changes, just construction techniques are changing, and I'm not a construction person, so I don't have a lot of background in this, but just the things the techniques that people are using in the implementation of this project than what they did just even 2 to 3 years ago. It's important that we continue to build capabilities within that workforce as well. And I guess that's to the degree that vocational programs can help us do that and continue to build those skills, totally supportive of that.
Yes, Vice Chair Riley.
One final question, at least for me. and that's, you mentioned that the workforce, there won't be a lot of people added because of this particular machine, but is this not going to cause you to have to add some conversion when this is all done? Is that
well? That's a very good question. And these mills, they're linked at the hip, as you point out. And in fact, the mill's continuing to look at strategic investments around converting. We just announced to the mill force two additional converting lines coming into Wana. One of them is a brand spanking new tissue line from totally new technology, really to the industry. It's an Italian Perini line, but that just continues to happen. And I think that's one of the nice things about investing in the paper. Number 7 project was really a paper project. It was a paper machine project. Mm-hmm. The issue for us was that, you know, like I said before, paper machines don't necessarily require a lot of people to operate, a lot of computers on it. And the operator's role really is to monitor the computer, mm-hmm. which is monitoring the process. But what you do when you put a paper machine into a mill is that you supply the infrastructure that fuels future employment. And that's, you know, I've seen so many mills that don't get paper investment that ultimately work everybody out of a job. And so that's one of the things I think that's unique to Wana is that now really the last two paper machine projects that Koch Industries and Georgia Pacific have announced have really gone into the Wana facility. We've got the last two paper machines, and that really bodes extremely well for the future of the mill.
Representative Dolan.
As it's been most interesting listening to your presentation, I believe it is a synopsis of everything we're doing. You've talked about the cost of production, energy. You've talked about education. You've talked about government becoming a partner in the process, and government becoming a speed partner. If I walk away from anything here, it's that you have to run and run and run and run and run. Mm-hmm. It's like Alice in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. You have to stay competitive, and you have to continually be bringing in new technology. The part that excites me about this is that our state was able to keep up. Mm-hmm. But the part that I'm concerned with is they were able to keep up today, but what are we going to do tomorrow? Because we're going to have to run and run and run and run if we're going to put Oregonians to work, and if we're going to keep ourselves at the forefront of any industry. It's too bad you have to be elected to be on this committee. I think you'd have been a good member.
Mm. All right. Yeah.
And we have to make sure we don't lose Artfish, I think.
Yeah, Artfish is a phenomenal resource. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you begin to dive into something like the SIP process, which we, you know, I couldn't even spell SIP, you know, up until we had this process. But, I mean, we had so many questions and so little time to work through the details of it. I mean, he was just an absolute godsend to us. So, and he helped us with the county, came out to the county, met with the county. So he was, because this was totally new to the county also. And I was frankly a little bit uncomfortable with that whole process. But we went to the county, talked about the SIP, the Strategic Investment Program, and we were in a rush. And that just didn't really feel all that right to us. In many ways, we were trying to get people to move quickly about something that they really didn't have a lot of background on. And everybody gets a little bit uncomfortable when we do that, myself included. I didn't want anybody to go off into an agreement that they were uncomfortable with either. So it was just very important that we got a lot of support from the state. And Art was there when we needed him. So yeah, we really appreciated his help.
I'd like to just to kind of follow up on Representative Holby's question about the availability and the importance of labor in this project. And I can remember distinctly kind of setting the overall context in which this project occurred just upriver from the Wana project were several energy projects that were going on at Port Westward at the same time. I think about $2 billion of simultaneous construction. And I can remember three separate meetings that the corporate officials from Atlanta had come out to Portland to discuss the availability of labor. First of all, whether we had the skills necessary here to be able to
conduct the unit rate contracting method, which I'd like to follow up with a question mm-hmm. about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But also whether we had enough, literally enough bodies between several other construction projects and then the installation of the number 7 machine, which had to go forward very, very quickly. The corporate office was exceedingly concerned to the point that they did not think, I am convinced, did not think that we would be able to supply adequately trained labor supply. And I'm not sure, Mr. Snyder, whether you're familiar with that portion of it, but if you are, could you comment on how that labor force was brought to bear?
In terms of unit rate and all that.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, there was some real question about whether the state of Oregon could really come through and supply the construction labor that we needed on the time frame that we were on. But the whole unit rate agreement and the way we're going out to contract this is very, very interesting to me. And I am no expert on it by any stretch of the imagination, but I'll talk to it on a high level. On the WANA 6 project, you know, we basically negotiated back and forth who was going to contract, who was going to be our primary contractor. And in those days, it went to the industrial company, TIC, a non-union. A large portion of that project went to a non-union contractor. Now, we're all about value. We're all about creating the most value for our shareholder, in this case, shareholders, or in this case, we have a couple of people who own us. But really, that's what we're about, is adding value and executing projects on a timely basis for really as low a cost as we can get it done in a quality format. So that's really, simply put, that's what our incentives are, union, non-union. We try to keep ourselves necessarily not focused on those kinds of issues because it's, again, we're really about value. The as we began talking through the WANA 6 or WANA 7 project, that's when this unit rate contract came forward. Now the argument that we always have within the mills and within the company as we start talking about contract strategies is that the union contractors typically will tell you our labor rates are higher but we're more efficient. So then you can execute the project on a value basis. The non-union contractors will tell you that our labor rates are lower and we can execute the project as efficiently as anybody else can. So really, rather than get ourselves into that debate, if you will, what we try to do is extricate ourselves from it as best as we could, and that's what this unit rate contract strategy comes forward. Under unit rate, we don't necessarily negotiate labor rates or hours or anything at all like that. We basically will pay a contractor for example, a lineal foot of 8-inch stainless steel 316L pipe, okay, that's installed. So labor rates, efficiency, it all rolls up into this total unit rate concept. So at the end of the day, you pay for the plant that you install. But again, our overall perspective is about value, and what we're trying to do is create the most amount of value for our company as we can. And on the WANA 7 project, as we went through this unit rate, now I don't know if it's unit rate, I don't know where I fall quite yet on the overall efficiency labor rate standpoint, but the union contractors that are working on the WANA 7 project earned the right to work on those projects. There was no standalone agreement on the project. The contractors earned the right to take this project on. So, and my suspicion is that the unit rate, the ability for a contractor to bring to bear the efficiency of their workforce in addition to the labor rates roll all up into that unit rate. And I think it's probably a very good strategy for contracting in the future.
And in addition to that, Representative Holvey, once again, the state of Oregon and the State Building Trades Council were instrumental in making the kind of assurances that were necessary to the company that an adequate labor supply would be available, and they delivered. It was, I think, critically important to the decision in whether or not that machine would be located at Wana. Critically important. I just probably the first major hurdle that at least that I from the outside was aware of.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it absolutely is critical. And when we first started meeting with the Building Trades Council, we had to talk about what is unit rate. A lot of us hadn't really heard about unit rate contracting strategies, and I think in many ways, I wasn't necessarily at all those meetings, but I think the Building Trade Council grabbed a hold of that whole unit rate concept as a means to bring to bear their efficiencies, because people believe, they truly believe that they're more efficient, and if you are more efficient, then, and it really gets back to what we've been talking about in our mill, if you're really efficient, your labor rates can be a little bit higher than otherwise, because in the end, the cost of your product, which from our, in this case is the cost to install a paper machine, the cost of your product is an advantage to the customer, and I think that's really what the unit rate strategy brought to bear. But people embraced that, and that in itself was a significant element for us in the overall decision to put the machine into Oregon. Had we had some pushback around the unit rate strategies, people didn't understand it, people didn't like it, it was new, that by itself may have been a stumbling block for us. But in the end, people grabbed a hold of that. I mean, just I don't want to sound like I'm just repeating myself, but every step of the way on this project, we just had a positive experience, positive feedback, and we were able to execute all the things that we needed to do to get the project done. So just a lot of positives here. I wish I had some negatives for you.
Representative Dahl.
I want Ellen to bring us some more of these good news deals.
Additional questions or comments?
I wanted to say what a great job Marshall's done at this panel.
Yes. Yeah, right now.
I haven't been kicked yet.
Well, and before we close, too, I just like to recognize, introduce, and welcome Communications Director Christy Ward. Thank you very much, Christy, for not only today, for all the help that you provided me in the past. I certainly appreciate that. Marshall, Mr. Snyder, Christy, thank you all very, very much for your presentation here today. As Representative Dahlem said, I think we heard all the pieces that we've talked about here this session come together today with your presentation. We are most appreciative. Thank you very, very much.
Mr. Chair, thank you for inviting us. Ellen, thank you for coordinating our visit, and thank you all for the good questions. Appreciate your time, too.
Thank you. Any further business to come before our committee today?
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you for this great opportunity, the presentation of the Georgia Pacific. This is good information, and I do appreciate Chair for doing that.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. Thank you very much. Ellen, would you please give us a brief summary of what we're going to be doing on Friday?
Thank you, Chair Whip. Members of the committee, on Friday, May 11th at 8 a.m. here in Hearing Room C, you'll be getting back to work on Senate bills, and you'll be hearing Senate Bill 139A, which you've heard previously. The amendments are ready, and that bill requires a person operating a public-use airport to provide notice of a permanent closure. And you'll have your first public hearing and a possible work session on Senate Bill 492A, which renames the Oregon State Boxing and Wrestling Commission as the Oregon State Athletic Commission.
And with that, we stand adjourned until Friday. Committee members, thank you very much.